give, make you do it. Makes us harder, better, faster, stronger.
Campbell on second down and 5.5. Looks right, comes back to the left, going long for Gordon. He's out there, and he caught the ball at the 20, at the 15, 10, 5, touchdown!
Unbelievable catch, unbelievable throw.
Coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio, this is Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Takes the snap, Dalton back, looking near side, throws it, picked off, and an open run. It's Joe Hayden, and he's in, touchdown!
And now, here are your hosts, Vic Carucci and Nathan Zagura.
Nathan Zagura, the notorious VIC, Vic Carucci, in a moving on Tuesday as we get ready for a big game. It is Steeler week. The Browns still very much alive in the wild card race. Big game against the Pittsburgh Steelers this Sunday at First Energy Stadium. Come out and support the squad there. And I know there's still a lot to talk about what happened over the weekend, and we will get into that, obviously, in more detail. We want to hear from you. 216-578-0850. Again, 216-578-0850. We also want to get your barks from the Dog Pound on Twitter, @Browns_daily. Got a good show lined up for you over the course of the next 2 hours. We will hear from Paul Kruger. We will hear from Devon Bess. We will have Jim Donovan by phone at 1:30 p.m. Eastern. We'll play the game that is sweeping the nation on Tuesday. Everybody looks forward to it after further review at 2:15. And, of course, Gerard Cherry will join us for his daily hit. And now, Vic, we are 24 hours removed from yesterday's show. How are you feeling on this Tuesday, my friend?
You know, I'm feeling much better. Time heals.
Always.
And I definitely feel a lot better than I did. Not a lot better, but better. Better.
Okay. We'll take it. We can build on that.
I'm in more of a lamenting mode. Yesterday it was more anger, lashing out type of thing, and I was going to lash out at the nearest person here, and that was you. So,
I
appreciate the fact that you allow me to do that and in such good fashion. You know, you just kind of sat back there and just said, okay, crazy man, just laugh. So I did.
But not crazy, you're fired up. And that's what the passion that a lot of Cleveland Browns fans can relate to. It's that passion that makes rooting for this team so great and at times so difficult. But I think the lamenting is the right word, because I still think when you go back and you strip the emotion from it, don't you feel like they did a lot of things, and you didn't do everything, obviously, because they lost 41-20, but a lot of the things that were necessary to win that game, and at a time when they were ahead 13-0, got the ball back at their own 20, you felt pretty good about their chances.
There's no doubt that is how I felt. As the game wore on, I mean, the early part of the game, I was in a pretty good place. Now, again, that field goal bugged me a whole lot, and I always say that as the omen. But I wrote a piece today for ClevelandBrowns.com where I focused on the what-ifs and tried to kind of lay out the scenario, and I think it was therapeutic for me to just deal with all the things that I saw happen in that game and then counter it by saying, look, you look at all these what-ifs. You know, what if all these bad things that we know happened didn't happen? And you ask those questions because of the statistical anomaly that was this game.
Right.
The 93 passing yards for Dalton, the two catches for A.J. Green, the one of 14 third down conversions by the Bengals, the 3.4 rushing yards that the Bengals running game managed, and all of those should have added up to probably a double-digit Browns victory. That was a statistical anomaly. So Then when I, again, put on the football hat and look at the completeness of it, or lack thereof, that this is a complete, football is a complete game, football's a team game, and they were lacking all these other things, and that's where the frustration came in. But the biggest what if of all, and this is the part that, this is why I was mad yesterday and more in a melancholy mood today. And I wrote this: what if the Browns had won? What if they had swept the season series? What if they had moved a half game within first place of the AFC North? We're all crazy. We're all staring at the more realistic-looking picture now of this team being in postseason contention and feeling really good about it. And you know what? Steeler week, which is a big week, and we're into Steeler week now. We'll ramp it up more tomorrow and beyond. This would have felt so much different than it does now.
Yeah.
Doesn't feel quite the same. It's Steeler week, but it's not Steeler week the way it would have been had circumstances been different.
Because it would have been Steeler week, where a win puts the Cleveland Browns in first place of the AFC North. They would have had the tiebreaker over the Cincinnati Bengals. Yep. They would be the first place team in the AFC North with a win this week. So, yes, that is the what if that hurts the most, because when you watch the game, and I think even to me, 48 hours removed from it and going back and I rewatched a lot of the game yesterday, the Bengals are very unimpressive. They are very unimpressive. The Browns were just even less impressive with the sloppy mistakes and the unfortunate complete breakdowns they had in punt protection, the costly interceptions, of course, the turnover, the sloppiness, the lack of execution. And as I go, I went back, and I've had a lot of people come up to me on the streets and say, man, you know, they just weren't ready. They weren't prepared. The bye week must – I don't buy that. They were prepared. I think they were extremely prepared. I thought the game plans were actually very good. To me, it came down to – and this was a question we had last week. Could they execute and take care of business in the biggest of moments? And in this first attempt at it, the answer was no.
No. Yeah, it did come simply down to that. I think there's some other factors, and you know, I think maybe some reality check, certainly at the quarterback position. I give Jason Campbell so much credit for what he did against Baltimore and really what he did this Sunday, because the man definitely was reeling with some sore ribs. He had to take a painkiller to play that game. I mean, it was not that that should shock anybody that you'd get that ability to kind of fight through the game, but he did. And I fully expected a veteran player to kind of go through that. It's not uncommon in this game for players to deal with that, but he was going to tough it out. I think it obviously created some limitations for him, but then more than that, I think we saw, and we've said this right along, what would a third game in a row look like for this guy as the Browns starter, knowing that in his career he'd not put together three games like he had, like the two games that preceded this. So there were question marks there, and it leads to the legitimate question of, okay, you sort of, water reaches its natural level, and you sort of know where you are with Jason as your quarterback, and you sort of know your quarterback terrain for this football team, because there's no one else other than Brandon Whedon who is going to quarterback the Browns this season, depending on how Jason's health works out and whatever happens with performance. I think he can give you some games like he gave you, but I think that false sense of, well, he can do this consistently over the course of the second half of the season was not realistic.
I agree with that, and we went back and looked, and he had never had a better quarterback rating for a two-game stretch in his entire NFL career. He had never thrown five touchdowns without an interception in a two-game stretch. It really was the best two-game stretch of Jason Campbell's career, and there's going to be some regression to the mean. Those were the statistical outliers, as it were, in his nine seasons in the NFL as opposed to the norm. Jason Campbell is Jason Campbell, and he's a very solid player, and he has moments where he can look very good. He also is going to have some off games, and that's what that was, and the ribs may have played a big part of it. Psychologically, I think this was a very different game for Jason Campbell. First of all, we've seen with some of the young quarterbacks or backups who have come in, after about two games, they either get a lot better, or teams, if they come out with a hot start, teams get some tape on them they don't do as well. We saw that with Case Keenum this past week against the Oakland Raiders. It seems like maybe the book is a little bit out on Case Keenum now. So you just have to wonder if, you know, Kansas City, he went into a game with absolutely no expectations. There were zero expectations for his performance level in that game. And anything he did would have been excused, given that it was his first start. It was on the road in Kansas City. Their pass rush is so great, etc. The game against Baltimore, I think there were some expectations. There was a thought it was a big game, and he came through. And then I think, you know, we talked a little bit about the hyping of this game with Cincinnati. 2 weeks to sit on it. All the focus on Jason Campbell. And, you know, in this game, he did not live up and meet the challenge. There were missed throws early, and whether or not the ribs had a factor in the miss to Greg Little, I think it would be hard to say the ribs did. I think, you know, a lot of people could have put the loft on the ball to make that throw. It just didn't work out. The execution at the critical moments, the difference between winning and losing, didn't happen for the Browns. But this game against the Steelers can get them right back into the discussion, right back into the wild card hunt. And I think, Vic, and we got a good tweet about it on just a second ago from at Johnson Nation 5. He said, Vic, you will get your Steelers week the last game of the year. There's the potential still. The Browns are going to need, we got to take one step at a time, win the one. But for that last game at the Steelers, to be the Steelers week, you want where there are serious implications.
I love that. That's a great tweet, and I appreciate that very much. to put a little salve on the wounds, if you will. Here's the other thought I had about this team off this weekend, especially Nathan. It raised some questions about leadership, and I'll tell you what I mean. I think by and large, this is not a team loaded with really strong leaders. We know who they are. We know the obvious names, and that first one will be DeQuell Jackson. That'll always come up for being the classy, the wisdom that he has, the respect that he commands, first and foremost because of how he plays, but also how he comports himself in that locker room. And he has looked upon his years, his accomplishment, what he overcame in injuries, what he does in terms of being disciplined with his responsibilities and knowing those signals well and distributing those well in that signal calling defensive role that he has as middle linebacker. All those things, he commands that respect. But I think there is much more needed within this football team, and I'm not even talking about more fiery. I'm just talking about more of that and frankly, more of it on the offensive side. And that's really what's lacking. There's a void, a vacuum of leadership, I think, on the offensive side of the ball to match what DeQuell Jackson is on the defensive side. And I'll go a step further. As I understand it, other players have been stepping up on the defensive side, namely T.J. Ward, trying to assert himself as more of a voice and a presence now in his fourth year. And this is when that should happen, by the way, when you start feeling in your fourth year a greater sense of confidence in your place on the team and who surrounds you and how they view you and your play. And he's elevated his play to, I think, a Pro Bowl level for sure, and along with Joe Hayden. But I think as far as TJ's makeup, maybe versus Joe's makeup, just a little different in terms of how they handle themselves. And I'm going to put TJ more in that category. And again, from what I understand, he was pretty vocal at halftime in Cincinnati, and he's been carrying that through. I also understand the players got together and had with everybody, but had a more of an open vocal meeting yesterday here to just kind of talk about what took place in Cincinnati and address all those points and frustrations that we're talking about, that we as media, as fans, as observers contemplate. But I look at the offensive side of the ball, and I still see something missing there in the way of leadership. It naturally has to come from the quarterback position, Nate, but I don't think Jason Campbell's thing to do that. He's a pro. He's a veteran. He's the adult of the offense. I think he's viewed with that level of respect. But in terms of commanding and taking charge and really showing the way, we know this was not Brandon Whedon's way. He's not wired that way. So who is that guy? And it usually has to be the quarterback. That's missing.
It's definitely missing. I also want to give a big kudos to Joe Hayden as a leader on the defense, because he may not be as vocal as some of the others, but I know he is starting to assert himself in his fourth year. We know what he went through last year to come back and comport himself in the way that he has. And not only that, but his play on the field. In the biggest game that he said that he's been in since the national championship game, he turned in arguably the best performance of his career with the two interceptions.
Easily, I think.
Eliminated A.J. Green, made him a complete non-factor. He's given up on the season less than 5 yards per target attempted at him. He is playing some of the best football, and he's a leader right now to me in the locker room, and more importantly on the field with what he does. And now we're talking about the defense, so that's three guys we've got on the defense, and there are others. I think Phil Taylor, the way that he plays up front, establishes an attitude and a way of doing things for this defensive line. It's physicality. The leaders are there. On the offensive side of the ball, you bring up a great point, and part of it comes back to the fact that there really isn't an identity. You look around the teams in the NFL, they have an identity, and the leadership can come from three places, in my opinion. It can come from the quarterback, which you see on many of the very, very good football teams. It can come from an attitude that stems from the offensive line, and that typically, though, to me, comes with a power team like a Carolina Panthers, a Seattle Seahawks, a 49ers. You can have that where our identity is we're just going to dominate you physically at the point of attack. Right. They certainly do not have that on this offensive line. It can come from a running back, an Adrian Peterson, a Marshawn Lynch, who has the will to carry you in spite of what would seem like very difficult situations. They don't have that. The biggest, to me, the biggest star on this offense is clearly Josh Gordon. And he, in his second year, we know what he's been through off the field. He's not ready to be a leader, and I don't think he should be asked to be a leader. He should ask to become a consistent playmaker, and he's working to that end. He still has things to do in terms of finishing his routes, et cetera. But you're right. There isn't anybody there because you're not a running team. We know that. I mean, they're one of the worst running football teams in the National Football League right now.
Yep.
Being a passing team schematically is great, and I think that is schematically the identity of this team. But being a passing team in the NFL, when you look at the other true passing teams and the fact that they're led by guys like Drew Brees, like Aaron Rodgers, like Matt Stafford, like Tom Brady, like Peyton Manning, it becomes a little bit more difficult and is prone to more inconsistency when you're a passing football team led by Jason Campbell at this point in his career. And that's really what it is. That's the issue. He needs to play the best Jason Campbell football he can play. And that was good enough, frankly, for 1-1. And if he can continue to play that football, they're going to be 500 or better, and I would say better, over the last six games. Maybe have a chance to get to 4-2, as we talked about. But that's really part of the problem.
Yeah, I think why it matters even more in a week like this, or I should say it should have mattered a lot more last week leading up to that Cincinnati game, is that that's where that reinforcement comes from. Which side of the ball played exceptionally well? And it was the defense. As exceptionally well as a defense can play in a losing effort, and even those who, on that side of the ball, will say, hey, whatever we did wasn't good enough because of the final score. And you should say that, and you should feel that way. And I think, by and large, they do, with some frustration. But I think, we know that is where the brunt of the talent is, where the investment has been the greatest, right? That's what they did. They set this team up that way. That all said, you should have someone showing the way beyond coaching within your player ranks that makes everyone on that side of the ball understand. It's understood special teams are going to lack a little something because of the nature of that group. It's made up of fringe players, younger players. The NFL salary cap doesn't allow you to keep true veteran leadership in your special teams area, which every coach, and especially special teams coaches, will lament. But that's a fact of football business life. But in terms of what you look at with the makeup of this team and what they really needed going into that Cincinnati game, was just that, was just a sense of it had to go beyond X's and O's preparation. It had to go beyond, as you call it, the schematic approach of, hey, this is what we do best, this is what we've got to do. And it is for this team. That is why their identity is that of a throwing team. But you also have to have an understanding of what you are, who you are, what you're trying to accomplish. And I thought that was missing. I thought there was a void there. I think there will kind of continue to be a void there, just because it's not in someone's makeup to kind of lead and command. There just are. I've been around too many quarterbacks with that it leadership factor, Nathan, in my life, and I'm sure you've been around them too. You know who they are. They walk into a room, they own the room. They own it. They own whatever space they're on is theirs, and you don't dispute that. That's the quarterback. And unfortunately, what I've seen from the Browns since I've been part of this team with this show, especially since 2011. There isn't one guy who has been in this building who has had that type of aura at all.
And I think Jason Campbell brings a quiet veteran presence and type of leadership, and I think he brings a calming and a stability factor. But at the end of the day, he, as good as he played in those two games, that's what you need from him. And we talked about it. You need competent, mistake-free quarterback play. And Jason Campbell's certainly capable of that, but he is not the guy that's going to go out there and win you a bunch of games on his own. And he's not going to be, therefore, that kind of leader that you're talking about. That comes because that kind of leader comes from two things. It comes, number one, from the person's personality and just the way they conduct themselves. But number two, it comes from the fact that they're great players and they accomplish it, and you get that sense around them that you believe they are going to lead you to where you need to go in the most critical of moments. And that only comes from production and repeated performance and coming through in the clutch. And those are the people that have the it factors. Those are the people that go get in the Hall of Fame and lead teams to great run after great run after great run. And unfortunately, they are a little bit rare, and that's why this draft when the Browns look to select that next leader, that next it factor quarterback. Yeah. That's why it is so important that they find a way to get it right.
Just want to throw this out there that you can get that guy, by the way, even as a rookie or a guy who can become that guy by his second year, let's say. Because from everything I've heard from everyone I've spoken with in Indianapolis and from others who talk with others in Indianapolis, Andrew Luck is precisely that person. And from what I understand, Trent Richardson has been telling his friends and teammates on the Browns, you wouldn't believe that this guy, what this guy's all about, like what a take charge, no BS person he is, and that you have no doubt he's in charge. He runs it, and he calls people out, and he does it in the much that way you expect the Peyton Mannings and Tom Brady's to do it, and Luck is doing that. And I guess Trent Richardson was quite impressed with that much being on that football
team.
There's
no question. It's his team, and I think you're seeing it from a guy who in many ways would seem maybe less assuming in Russell Wilson in Seattle. There's no question that he is the leader of that team, and that's a team with a great defense, with a great ground game, et cetera. But, yeah, Andrew Luck, plus he's got kind of that Andre the Giant voice thing going on, he's unbelievable. And he knows what he's talking about. That's the other thing. It's one thing to be all
–
He puts in more time than anybody on that team in terms of studying and being prepared and knowing everything that he needs to know. And he's a special person. That's why he was the highest rated quarterback prospect in the entire NFL since John Elway, which goes to tell you just how highly he was regarded in terms of everything he brought to the table.
All right, so at 1:30, we're going to hear from Jim Donovan about 10 or so minutes from now. The voice
I like
of the
our
Browns.
Mega first segments, by the way. We just get rolling these days.
We do. We get into this good stuff, and it's worthy of the time that we give it. So from the PNC Bank Cleveland Browns Radio Network, you'll hear from Jim. And then the nationally and critically acclaimed, after further review, it's sweeping the nation. I don't know if anybody else in the nation knows that, but we are saying that. And that after the further review, we'll be on at 2:15. Gerard Cherry, about 2:40, thereabouts. You'll hear from Fozzie Whitaker on this show. Jameer Howerton going inside the locker room and getting some chat with him. So that'll be on the show. You mentioned earlier that we'll have some sound from who's going to talk with us? Oh, from was it Paul
Krueger?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we'll hear from Paul Krueger on the show. So we got some good.
And the top dog, Hanford Dixon, is in the house, in the building today. Remember, what's better than pigskin and pals?
Was having the alumni show up at Arby's.
It's happening. I believe that's happening right now. Hanford Dixon is the pal.
It's a beautiful thing.
It is.
He's a great pal.
All
right. Hang around for much more of CBD. Vic Carucci, Nathan Zagura, ESPN 850. Carly McCord's in the house. WKNR. But I'm just